You are listening to The Christian Commute, a commute-length podcast about Christian apologetics, theology, and other matters of Christian interest. Here is your host, Seth Dunn.
It is Wednesday, May 20th. This is The Christian Commute. I am your host, Seth Dunn, and you are sitting with me in the basement today still because I worked from home. Today is going to be a hybrid show, though, because I've pre-recorded the show topic while I went to pick up lunch. So I've already pre-recorded that show topic. It's about Al Mohler and liberalism. I'll come up with a catchy name for it when I upload this podcast, or maybe I'll come up with another a lame name from her or something. I'm not great at naming things, so who knows, but I will name it something. But it's about Al Mohler and the firing of Dr. Fuller up there and the accusations of liberalism being tolerated at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. That's today's show topic. I have a question in the inbox about, it's about Arminianism, really, but particularly a question about the book of Acts. And as always, we have the Bible chapter review. I'll get to that in a minute. I just want to apologize to you guys for no show yesterday. Yesterday, I was writing my Beth Moore book. I was just really pounding it out, and I thought, I've got to get this done. I'll skip the show. And also, those of you who are on the Pod-O-Matic feed are probably missing Monday's show because it can't be published. I'm out of space. So I almost bought unlimited space on Pod-O-Matic today, but I thought, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to go through and delete some old shows from Pod-O-Matic. Don't worry, they'll still be on the Bible Thumping Wingnut feed. And this is me recognizing once again that I need to update my Bible Thumping Wingnut archives. Some of you may be going deep into the archives in this situation because what else have you had to do during quarantine? And I want to say I'm in somewhere around 980 shows right now. I don't know the exact number, but there's a lot to listen to. So here we go. Not all of those are on the archives, by the way. Maybe I'll do that after I finish recording. Here we go. Let's get started with the Bible chapter review. We're in chapter 3 of 1 John 2. I'm sorry, verse 3. We're in verse 3 of 1 John chapter 2. By this we know that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. And I can remember Jesus saying, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Where does he say that? We can just Google. If you love me, you will keep my commandments. How did William Carey do it? John 14:15, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. So here is in 1 John, by this we know that we have come to know him if we keep his commandments. The one who says, I have come to know him, and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word in him, the love of God has truly been perfected. By this we know that we are in him. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. Remember the show question from Monday? Charles was saying, how do I know somebody is converted? And I said, you need to focus on that at your local church where you can really witness people. Here it is. The one who says I've come to know him and doesn't keep his commandments is a liar. So if you say I'm a Christian, but you continually live a worldly lifestyle. You know, when you get saved, you don't change your wife. You don't change your job. You don't change your favorite colors. A lot of things about you that you don't change that just have to do with who you are that aren't moral things that you might call amoral things. Like if you like chocolate ice cream, you don't stop eating chocolate ice cream. You still like chocolate. But if you like to go to the show bar, that's another name for a strip club, Why do they call them clubs? You mean, I'm going to the strip club. I'm going to the dance club. Like, you don't join. You don't have dues. Why is it a club? They let anybody in if you pay. So when you go to the strip club, maybe you're going to stop that. You go out drinking every Friday night. Maybe you're going to stop that. Listen, you don't stop going out Friday night. You still go out Friday night and see your friends. You go to the restaurant. You go to the Braves game. You just stop getting drunk. All right? So that's what we're looking for. Somebody says, I have come to know him. In other words, didn't know him before, living for myself in the world. Now that I have come to know him, but I don't keep his commandments. Nope, don't believe you've come to know him. It's about change. It's about turning from the world towards the kingdom. So the one who says, I've come to know him and does not keep his commandments is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, in him, the love of God has truly been perfected. So you look at the people living the life who are seeking to please God and not man and not live as if they're still in the world. You know, we Baptists like to say, be in the world, not of the world. And I think we even get down in verse 15, do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. So we will eventually get to that on the Bible Chapter Review. And when we get there, remember what we said here in verses 3 through 6. By this we know that we are in him. So now we're considering ourselves being in him. What do we have to worry about? By this we know that we're in him. The one who says he abides in him. Stop. Somebody's calling me at 5:33. Come on, it's showtime. By this we know that we are in him. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. I wonder if that was the person with my lawnmower parts. My wife has broken my lawnmower. Both my wheels are off it. Sorry, Bible chapter, more important than lawnmower. Calls distract me. By this we know that we are in him. The one who says he abides in him ought himself to walk in the same manner as he walked. That's why they call us Christians, because we're trying to be like Christ. All right. So when we're making these assessments and judgments, is this person acting like Jesus? Be Christ-like. And with that, we'll end the Bible Chapter Review, and we'll go to the inbox. Do you have a question about Christian theology or apologetics? If you do, you can write in to SethDunn88@gmail.com, SethDunn88@gmail.com, or dial 470-315-0875. The Christian Commute is your theological roadside assistance. Keep it short. Tell me where you're from. Today is an audio question about Acts 27. And since it's a studio podcast, the basement studio, I'm just going to play it and we're going to listen. So let me turn my volume up on my laptop. Bing! Here we go.
Hey, Seth. This is Jeff from Slow Driving, Florida. Got a question for the show for you. I was reading in Acts 27, and this is the account of Paul and his shipwreck where Paul first gets an angel from God coming to him and telling him, hey, everybody on the ship is going to live. But then later on, the account where it talks about the people who are about to get off the ship, but then Paul says, if you get off the ship, you're all going to perish. But my question is, would that be a good argument to the Arminian to say there it has nothing to do with your free choice to get off the ship, because God already knows who's going to be saved, and he already knows that you're not going to get off the ship, where that'll supersede your free will, or not. So I haven't heard really anybody really dive into that account specifically to show the sovereignty of God in that. All right? Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right, so let's go over that question again. He's talking about Acts 27 and Paul's shipwreck account. So I'll just read it starting in verse 14. But before very long, there rushed down from the land a violent wind called Euryquilo. Oh, by the way, Paul is in the custody of Roman soldiers. He's a prisoner on this ship, and he's being transported to appear before Caesar. And Luke is with him. But before long, there rushed down from the land a violent wind called Euryquilo. And when the ship was caught in it and could not face the wind, we gave way to it and let ourselves be driven along. Running under the shelter of a small island called Clauda, we were scarcely able to get the ship's boat under control. After they had hoisted it up, they used supporting cables and undergirding the ship, and fearing that they might run aground on the shallows of Syrtis, they let down the sea anchor, and in this way let themselves be driven along. The next day, as we were being violently storm-tossed, they began to jettison the cargo. And on the third day, they threw the ship's tackle overboard with their own hands. Since neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small storm was assailing us, from then on, all our hope of being saved was gradually abandoned. So you see these guys in this ship. They're in the sea, in the Middle East area there. I don't, what sea are they in? Are they in the Mediterranean Sea? I don't even know. We can look it up. Let's see here. Where were they? They land on an island. Oh. Oh, I thought I paused it. They're in the Adriatic Sea. They're in the Adriatic Sea. The Adriatic Sea is the sea in between the boot that is Italy, the peninsula that is Italy, I should say, and continental Europe, like Bosnia. So that's the Adriatic Sea. When they had gone a long time without food, then Paul stood up in their midst and said, "Men, you ought to have followed my advice and not to have set sail from Crete and incurred this damage and loss." And it's you got to understand, it's a dire situation, because Luke's saying we can't even see the sun and stars. There's so many clouds. It's this horrible tempest, and the rain and the storm and the wind is beating down upon them, so much so that they think they're going to sink. They're throwing the cargo overboard. "Yet now I urge you to keep up your courage, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship. For this very night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve stood before me, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted you all those who were sailing with you. Therefore, keep up your courage, men, for I believe God that it will turn out exactly as I have been told. But we must run aground on a certain island.'" So Paul's saying, "Guys, we're not going to die. We're going to leave the ship. God has told me it's going to happen." "But when the 14th night came," so they made it on 2 weeks, man. "So when the 14th night came, as we were being driven about in the Adriatic Sea, about midnight, the sailors began to surmise that they were approaching some land. They took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms." So they figured out how deep the water was. And they're thinking, you know, as we get closer to land, it's going to be more shallow. "And a little farther on, they took another sounding and found it to be 15 fathoms." So they can see they're getting closer to the shore. "Fearing that we might run aground somewhere on the rocks, they cast 4 anchors from the stern and wished for daybreak. But as the sailors were trying to escape from the ship and had let down the ship's boat into the sea on the pre... I'm sorry. But the, as the sailors were trying to escape from the ship and had let down the ship's boat into the sea on the pretense of intending to lay out anchors from the bow, Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, 'Unless these men remain in the ship, you yourselves cannot be saved.' Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the ship's boat and let it fall away." So here's what's trying to happen. The sailors have figured out they're close to the ground. And they've already ditched their cargo. They know their ships are lost. They're trying to save themselves. So they have what we might call lifeboats. And they figure, we're close enough to land where we can get in these boats and we can go figure out, we can just escape. So that's what they say under this pretense. They said, we're going to let down the ship's boat into the sea, or the lifeboat, and we're going to lay out anchors. That's what we're going to do. We're going to lay anchors for the ship. But Paul's saying, no, I think these guys are trying to escape and save themselves. And if they escape and save themselves, you guys are dead, because then there's no sailors left and we're just out here with no lifeboat. And the Roman soldiers who are guarding him, they cut away the ropes of the ship's boat. So the boat falls, you know, the boat floats away, and the sailors can't escape. If they're going to escape, they're all going to escape together when the boat runs aground, the larger vessel. When it runs aground. And that's exactly what Paul said is going to happen. It's going to run aground. And I think what Josh is saying here, is it Josh or Jeff? I could have swore.
Seth. This is Jeff from Slude.
Ah, it is Jeff. The Google voice thought he said Josh. Josh, you can't even pronounce your own name, man. Jeff. Jeff from Slude, driving Florida. He said, well, what about an Arminian who sees this? Because God said this is going to happen. But then Paul said, if these people take this action, what God said is going to happen isn't going to happen. So was God looking out into the future and recognizing the free will events and saying the sailors of their own free will are going to try to leave the ship and the soldiers of their own free will are going to stop them? So God knows what the people are going to do. And if the soldiers had left, then God would have been wrong. And Jeff's saying, could Arminians use this verse to talk about free will, I guess, versus determinism? Here's the thing. I think we're way out of scope. If you're a Calvinist or an Arminian or anything in between, I think you're really outside the scope of those soteriological doctrines when you use this verse for this. This is just something that's happening. But yes, we see that God does have a plan for Paul, and God gives Paul this message from an angel. But an Arminian believes this about salvation, all right? And don't confuse them with a Pelagian. Arminian would believe that he cannot on his own come to know Christ. He can't choose Christ. He can't do it until God gives him prevenient grace. And God's prevenient grace allows the Arminian to overcome original sin or his sin nature and of his own free will choose God. He chooses. He couldn't, but the prevenient grace allows him to. Whereas the Calvinist said God's irresistible grace draws that person. It was God who chose to give that guy the irresistible grace. Monergism. All one-sided. And the Arminian would say, no, synergism. God chose to give me the prevenient grace, but I had to go the second mile. I had to take the second step. I had to respond. God asked me to the prom, but I had to say, yeah, please take me to the prom. Because I wasn't going to get to the prom myself. So that's how they think of it. So when you understand that soteriology and what they think, I don't really see how this comes into play. God knew either way. So, I mean, I think what the people who believe in conditional election might say is God elects those people based upon what he knows they're going to do. But this isn't talking about election. This is talking about jumping off a boat. I mean, there's Calvinists who, even somebody like Martin Luther might say this, God decides who's going to get saved, but you decide what sandwich you're going to have. So when you talk about election and salvation, you can go beyond that and talking about free will. Because if somebody says, well, if God chooses for you to get saved, you don't have free will in anything you do. You're not picking your sandwiches. All right. You're not picking whether you decide to jump off a boat or not. That is, how would I say this? Is a perceived implication of the soteriological view. But if we just take the soteriological views in mind, I don't think an Arminian would make an argument from this. And here's the thing. I would have to hear that Arminian's argument rather than make one for him and strawman him. But if you've got an Arminian trying to make some kind of argument about salvation from this, I mean, I don't know if they understand Arminianism, quite frankly. You know what? A lot of people don't understand how they got saved, but aren't you glad they did? And aren't you glad you did? So do you know Jesus? If not, get saved. Repent of your sins. Jesus Christ died on the cross to pay for sin. So with that, I will end this portion of the show. I'm going to splice the third part of the show in, and here it comes. Okay, let's talk liberalism. At the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Liberalism at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And we'll talk about that as I drive to Chick-fil-A to pick up my order here. So I will tack this on either to the back of a Bible chapter review and question from the inbox, or I'll just make it its own episode of the Christian Commute. I don't know. Things are in flux while I'm working from home. What day is it? May 20th. So I did not do a show yesterday. If I did, it would have been about this. A video was released by John Harris of Conversations That Matter. And I think he's working with the people at Enemies Within the Church. And he did an in-person video interview with a professor, or I guess I should say now, a former professor from Southern Baptist Theological Seminary named Dr. Fuller. Dr. Russell Fuller. Now, Dr. Fuller had been an employee of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary for 22 years. 22 years. He was a Hebrew professor, so he taught the Hebrew language, and he taught Old Testament. Now, his boss, for the entire time, for his entire tenure, would have been Albert Mohler, the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Albert Mohler has been president of that seminary for almost 30 years now. He was installed during the conservative resurgence and tasked with eliminating liberalism, purging the liberals from the seminary, and that he did years ago. Now, the interesting thing about Al Mohler is because he was a theological moderate. There's no doubt about it. There's no argument about it. It's documented. He was a theological moderate. He was a graduate of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary during the time when it was liberal, when they used to say you had to look up on top of the building. They had a weather vane on one of the buildings, and that weather vane, you know, depending on which way the wind was blowing, where the seminary was liberal or conservative that day. That's what they used to say, you know, back, but this is back in the late 70s, early 80s. And this is all documented, and I think I've mentioned this before. So he graduated from there, and he became the editor of the Georgia Christian Index. That's our paper here in Georgia. That's the Georgia Baptist Convention state paper. In fact, I go to church every Sunday with the editor of that paper. His name is Scott, and it's a conservative Baptist publication. And the guy before it, oh, what was his name? Dr. Harris. Gerald Harris. Gerald Harris was... He preached the sermon the day my babies were, my latest baby, my last baby, was dedicated. My son, what's his name? Pierce. Listen, I got five kids. I can't remember their names. But when we dedicated Pierce, Gerald Harris preached. So I'm very aware of the Georgia Christian Index. Now, right now, and for the last few years, the Georgia Baptist Convention, and I got my problems with it, and I think it's called the Georgia Baptist Mission Board now, but one of my problems with it has not been liberalism. Okay? But in Mohler's day, it was more moderate. In fact, just to tell a Cartersville story, there is a church here in Cartersville, and its name is Heritage Baptist Church, and it split off from one of the Southern Baptist churches in town over the moderate liberal conservative controversy. So that was happening in Georgia. There was a national fight, but there was also a local fight. The Georgia Baptist Convention lost Mercer to liberalism, but kept its other colleges. So there were church splits and stuff over this. It happened here. So when that was happening, Mohler, as the editor of the Georgia Christian Index, at first was sympathetic to the moderate cause. But as time marched on, and it looked like the moderate cause was going to be the loser, all of a sudden Mohler was a conservative. Albert Mohler actually wrote a petition or a motion in support of females in the pastorate early on at the Southern Baptist Convention, early on during the conservative resurgence. And of course, he had to later repudiate that position. So Al Mohler became conservative during a power shift. Al Mohler became conservative during a power shift, and everybody kind of forgot about it. I never knew about it.
You know, when I started going to seminary, Al Mohler was thought of as a bastion of conservatism. And if you listened to his preaching and then read his articles and listened to his podcast, you wouldn't think anything different. And I was very surprised to learn that he used to be a moderate. And now there are accusations of liberalism being taught at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. Theological liberalism. The biggest fear is critical race theory. Critical race theory being used as like a hermeneutical tool or a way to understand Scripture. And critical race theory is a form of cultural Marxism, and any kind of Marxism is going to stand opposed to a biblical worldview. Now, of course, the Baptist Faith and Message 2000 and the Abstract and Principles, the Abstract and Principles being the official statement of faith of Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, don't say anything about critical race theory, because, you know, what critical race theory wasn't invented yet, I don't think, when the Abstract and Principles were written. Okay, I think in the 1850 or something like that. I mean, it's a Civil War era document, if not older. Excuse me. So that getting back to Dr. Fuller, this professor, he and four other professors were fired, laid off, terminated, whatever you want to call it, within the last few weeks. And the official reason given by the seminary is, oh, it's budget cuts. We have to cut the budget. And a lot of organizations are cutting their budget, especially due to COVID. But I ask you this. If you were cutting professors out of your budget, would you cut tenured 22-year serving professors, a guy with a good record of teaching and 22 years of service, or are you going to cut the newer guy? Are you going to keep the experienced guy or the new guy? How does it work where you work? Where I work, I should say this. How about this? Because I don't want to speak for corporate policies where I work. Generally speaking, if somebody's very close to retirement, you might give that person a package and say, go ahead and retire because we're getting rid of your high salary. You know, if somebody's got 28, 29 years of service. But other times it goes by tenure. This is especially like in union environments, and of course a college, a university is not a union environment. In union environments, the guy with the least tenure goes. But it makes sense to keep your experienced guys is what I'm saying. So it's very fishy to me that this very tenured professor loses his job because, oh, we got budget cuts and we have COVID. It seems strange to me. What sticks out about this particular professor is that he signed the Dallas Statement, one of the only, if not the only, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary employee to do so. And the Dallas Statement was a rejection of cultural Marxism. Now, there's no doubt that there's people, this is documented, it's proven, that there's people teaching cultural Marxism at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, namely Jarvis Williams. And Jarvis Williams, if you just watch him talk, he reminds me of Barack Obama. Like I'm like, why is Barack Obama teaching at our seminary? That's what I think when I see Jarvis Williams, just if that paints the picture for you. So as is common Southern Baptist practice, Dr. Fuller was asked to sign an NDA. Remember I talked about NDAs the other day in the Bobby Lopez show. Dr. Fuller was asked to sign an NDA, and he wouldn't sign it. And he's actually come out and said, I wouldn't be able to sleep if I hadn't stood against what I thought was theological liberalism. So he has, in the first series of videos here by John Harris, he has made the accusation that there was a professor, I want to say the guy's name was Hernandez or something like that, who was accepted even though Fuller warned that there were theological liberal parts or leanings in the guy's published work. And it had to do with something like mythical figures in Job as explained by the speech of Bildad. Now this is something that is going to go straight over the heads of most pew sitters. I'm not going to dwell on it. I'm just going to say that this guy with a 22-year-old record of teaching conservatively said, hey, this guy we're bringing in is liberal and there's liberalism going on here. He spoke up about it and he was reprimanded by the powers that be. Mueller didn't want to hear of it. The deans didn't want to hear of it. And now, when it came time to get rid of somebody to lay people off, this guy's gone. The guy who said, "Hey, we've got a problem with liberalism," is gone. But unlike so many others, he refused to sign the NDA. He refused the money. He could not be paid off. And now he is sounding the alarm. And the problem when we look at things like this and we consider things like this is we have one witness from SBTS. We have this one guy, Fuller, speaking out. Oh, and he was fired. And when we go to Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, oh, we got this one guy speaking out. We got Bobby Lopez, and he was fired. Lopez was fired. Fuller was fired. These are just disgruntled people. No, these are the only people who refused the money, who refused the severance, who refused to be quiet. They couldn't be bought. Now, as I said before, Lopez didn't get an NDA because he said, "Don't even offer me one. I'm not going to sign it." The only people who have spoken out from the inside about liberalism at SBTS creeping in are the ones who've afraid to be bought. Now, here's the thing, and I think this is what John Harris misses. Because John Harris has a very intellectual podcast. He cites his sources very well. And he talks about cultural Marxism and how it's not only encroaching at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, but his own alma mater, Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. He thinks, oh, it's about cultural Marxism. This is liberalism. And I want to tell you this. Maybe the professors like Jarvis Williams or like this, I want to say Hernandez guy or Navarez or whatever guy they brought in at Southern Baptist that Fuller thought was liberal, maybe they really believe in cultural Marxism. Maybe they really do. But it's not about cultural Marxism. It's about attracting the money of people who do buy in to cultural Marxism and social justice. And I'm going to keep beating this dead horse on the Christian commute every time I get more evidence of it. So you might think, oh, well, Al Mohler and Dean Herschel York, they are buying in to the social justice movement. Let me tell the Chick-fil-A guy something. I have a mobile order for Seth Dunn.
Okay, you're good to go.
You might think Herschel York, and by the way, Herschel York, if you want to picture Herschel York, he looks like Colonel Sanders. It's like the Dean of Kentucky Fried Chicken. You look at his Twitter. He's got the goatee and everything. So you've got to imagine these people. Like, these are ivory tower people. You got Herschel York literally dressed like Colonel Sanders. Yeah, I don't think he's got his bow tie on, you know, in Kentucky, because the seminary is in Kentucky. And then you got Al Mohler with his bow tie and his blazer riding around in a golf cart. You've got to understand, Southern Baptist Theological Seminary is the place you can buy $100 fountain pens at a store. I mean, they had a supper club called Dodeca for elite people. It is kind of this upper crust elitist place. And you might think, oh, what's going on with, you know, these conservative guys with their $100 fountain pens? They're bowing to liberalism and social justice. No, what they care about is money. For every Jarvis Williams that comes in to the seminary, Jarvis Williams is going to attract students who wouldn't normally enroll there, most likely students of color. And these students of color who come from churches of color that are not traditionally Southern Baptist and don't give to the Southern Baptist Convention, they're going to go to the Southern Baptist Seminary. Then they're going to go back to their home church or back to their circles, and they're going to lead their churches into participation in the Southern Baptist Convention. And people say, no, we're not going to participate with those racist white elitists. And they say, oh, no. I went there. Dr. Williams is teaching critical race theory there. Matthew Hall has admitted that they're racist and it's bad. And, you know, they're turning over the new leaf. And we're getting our social ideas out. You know, we're preaching at the ERLC with Russell Moore about social justice. And then all of a sudden, oh yeah, they are. Where do they start buying their Sunday school material from? Lifeway. They're going to Lifeway. Where is their missions giving start going? It starts going to the cooperative program. You guys think, oh, this is about social justice? This is about color? Here's the color it's about, green. And I want to refer to you to an article that I wrote, I want to say 3 years ago, Dwight McKissick and the Color of Money in the SBC. So just Google that. What is this goofus doing? You're in your Pontiac Enclave, and you're in the middle of both lanes. Oh, I saw the look on her face. She knows she's in the wrong. I wrote that article, Dwight McKissick and the Color of Money in the SBC, and you can Google it. And I'm just afraid that guys like John Harris and even Dr. Fuller are missing it when they say liberalism. It's liberalism. It's liberalism. These people are liberal. Yeah, maybe the people who are coming in under the radar are liberal, but the powers that be, their problem is all they care about is money. Sometimes when I do this podcast or write an article, either on my own personal blog or Pulpit and Pen, or even when I'm writing my Beth Moore book. By the way, I finished a chapter 2 last night. I feel like Joker and Batman. Have I mentioned this before? What is not Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, the second one. And Joker takes over the criminal empire of Gotham City, and he stacks up $1 billion, and then he burns it. And he looks at the criminal who's with him, who's aghast, and he says, "All you care about is money." And the Joker's got something different that he cares about. He wants mayhem or whatever. And I feel like I went to the Southern Baptist Seminary, not the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, a Southern Baptist Seminary. I came up in Southern Baptist life at a Southern Baptist church. And I have Southern Baptist beliefs. I'm like, you know, these criminals, if you will, these mafia people, if you will. But all they care about is money, and I don't. You look at somebody like Ronnie Floyd and you think, well, he's not liberal. All he cares about is money. You look about somebody like Johnny Hunt or James Merritt and you think they might not be liberal. I think all they care about is money. And you look at somebody like Al Mohler, maybe he's liberal, maybe he's not. But all he cares about is money. It's nickels and noses. Nickels and noses. That's why Lifeway has crap. Lifeway doesn't necessarily sell liberalism. They just sell crap. Like Sarah Moore. I'm sorry, Sarah Young. Jesus Calling isn't liberalism. It's New Age mysticism. Beth Moore. Now, she's got a lot more woke lately. But if you look at her books where she's talking about your personal promised land, ladies, and I'm prophesying downpour, God told me Sabbath moments. That's not liberalism. It's just idiocy. It's just dumb. But it sells. Listen. Bob Dylan said it this way, it don't count unless it sells. So should we reject liberalism and critical race theory and social justice? Yes! Thank God for people like Dr. Fuller who are actually standing up against it and not rolling over. But what did he not roll over for? Money. He couldn't put his career above the gospel, above the kingdom. You cannot serve two masters. You will either love one or hate the other, or hate the other and love, or you either love one and hate the other, or hate one and love the other. That's what Jesus said. And he said, you can't serve both God and mammon, or both God and money. The power men in the Southern Baptist Convention. You have no idea. Listen, you have no idea how wealthy these guys are and what their lifestyle is. You got Al Mohler, he's got a high six figure. I'm not talking about $100,000 is six figures. You probably know quite a few people who make six figures, and they're not elite people. But I'm telling you, Al Mohler, you got somebody like that with a high six figure salary. And then he's going to make thousands with an S. on his preaching and speaking schedule on top of his salary and getting his meals paid for and his travel paid for. That's the same thing that happens at mega churches. Listen, I ate lunch with a guy yesterday who used to be in the mega church world. He said they'd buy him $700 suits and he had an alligator shoes. He said his brother thought he dressed like a pimp or somebody from the mafia. they got so much money and so much largesse. That's a lifestyle they have to maintain. Now, that's not the lifestyle of the IMB missionary out there walking around in the dirt and flip-flops or climbing a mountain in the Himalayas somewhere trying to save, you know, pagans in Tibet. But the guys at the top are rolling in the money, and what they tell you is, oh, we need your support for poor seminary students and poor missionaries. No, they need more money coming in for their power and influence. It's ridiculous. And it's funny if you look at, like, real Marxism in history. If you look at how, say, Stalin or Khrushchev lived as opposed to the people under them, or Mao. So you look at these communist leaders throughout history.
Oh, yeah, we got to get Marxism. We got to have Marxism. We got equal. Everybody's got to be equal.
Well, they make everybody equally poor except themselves. They become a ruling elite. And the ideology, forget the ideology. That's what they preach to the little people, but their ideology is my money, my power. So what we have now is people in Southern Baptist seminaries accepting liberalism, cultural Marxism, the social justice movement. Fine, they don't care about that. Listen, they don't care about that any more than they care about crew-cut fundamentalism. If the Bible says it, I believe it. Get the women preachers out of here. They don't care about that either. It's like a bad guy from American History X. He doesn't care about the cause. He just wants control. I am beginning to see that, or beginning to see, I think I have seen, that's what it is. But where are you going to clue in on that's what it is? And then, of course, always, what's it come down to? How do you apply what you know about this in your local church? Well, number one, stop giving to the stupid cooperative program. Stop buying crap from Lifeway. But here's the thing. If you have the culture at your church where your pastor's kind of a wine and dine executive, stop it. And if your church won't stop it, stop giving them money to fund it. These guys style and profile like Ric Flair. These mega men who bring the money into the SBC like Johnny Hunt, listen, they have personal tailors. How many people do you know with a personal tailor? Is it a sin to have a personal tailor? No. But when you think about who has personal tailors throughout history, like kings, dictators, maybe the president, you know, somebody like Donald Trump might have a personal tailor. I mean, think of who has a personal tailor. You think the Apostle Paul had a personal tailor? You think Peter had a personal tailor? Look at the culture that's been created. And the love of money. You see how the love of money is letting liberalism in the back door? How do you get rid of people who love money? You stop giving them money. Just stop giving it to them. And you might think, Seth, how did all this happen? Aren't there supposed to be trustees? Why aren't the trustees elected by the convention stopping all this at Southern Baptist Theological Seminary? Because when the trustees go to Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, they have to, if they want to get back on the plane with all the free stuff that they get, like coffee mugs and jackets, they're going to have to pack another suitcase. I mean, I might be exaggerating a little bit, but these people get wined and dined. I guess grape juice and dined, because, you know, they're still Baptists. Kevin Ezell, Al Mohler, these entity presidents, they are putting on a show. They're rolling out the red carpet for these trustees. The trustees are supposed to be holding them accountable. No, the trustees are getting prestige and honor and free meals. And quite frankly, a lot of them are lay people or pastors who've got other stuff to do. I mean, how many boards can you be on and be effective? So think about that as you think about Dr. Fuller and the Phantom Menace of Liberalism. Ooh, maybe that's what I'll call the show. Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Lord willing, I'll be back with you again tomorrow. As always, God bless. And as always, remember, Christianity is not about getting saved. It's about being saved.
Thanks for listening to The Christian Commute. Please send your questions about Christian apologetics and theology to sethdunn88@gmail.com. If you are not a Christian, please remember that you can be reconciled to God through the shed blood of His Son, Jesus Christ. The Bible teaches that all who call on the name of the Lord will be saved. Repent of your sins now and accept Jesus as Lord. God bless.